granting of free and reduced lunch programs, and it varies a lot from school district to school district. And I noticed that your percentage of Medicaid enrolled, which in terminology means Medicaid eligible rather, which the terminology really means enrolled, was higher than the sum of the percentage of the two, the sum of the percentage of the two group poverty groups, which might indicate some sampling bias in a convenient sample of this type. Those two things, what would you like to comment on those two sampling biases?
Yeah, so thank you for your question, first of all, and thanks for bringing up the results of the FRU. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'll just grab the microphone. Yeah, thank you for bringing up the FRU lawsuit, which we are currently working to address. And this study that I actually presented results from was also undertaken to reply to the FRU lawsuit. But so two things. One, I agree. A lot of times, the free or reduced lunch status is made at the school level, and whole schools are sometimes marked as having, you know. A lot of times, it's not made at the individual level, and it's made at the school level. So that's a good point. For this survey, though, individual students were. The data on free or reduced lunch was obtained at the individual level, but there was free or reduced lunch and Medicaid status were actually obtained together, and that may have led to some contamination with just the interpretation of is the child. It's possible. I just want to say that as a possible limitation because on the data collection form from the school level for each child, there was actually four categories, and I think it was are they receiving free or reduced lunch? So it's free or reduced lunch, Medicaid, free or reduced lunch, non-Medicaid, and then I think it's Maybe Dr. Say can help me out here, but as I recall, there are four categories. So the general population of students not on Medicaid or not receiving free, but it was a little kind of messy, and so I actually took that variable and separated it out because it was two things going on. One is Medicaid status, which is dependent on income, but it's also a measure of access to care.
Excuse me, the school wouldn't know the Medicaid status.
Well, that's a good question. I think that the Medicaid status may have been obtained from the parent permission form, and then that's how that information was obtained. So we're also doing a survey in Head Starts right now, where they're more involved with the children's care, so the Head Start health coordinator would know the Medicaid status of the child. But I will look more into that. Yes. Yes, actually, thanks for reminding me. The first survey that was done from 2004 to 2006 actually was a convenient sample, and it was over 17,000 kids, so it was actually quite a big sample. It represented most of the public school kids in Texas who were in schools with more than half of them receiving free or reduced lunch. The second survey, and actually Dr. Aaron Saig here is in the audience, one of my co-authors, he actually designed the sample design for the second survey. So the sampling frame was really every single public school in Texas that had a third grade. So it was really statewide representative. And it was a stratified random sample. It was stratified by border, non-border status, and also urban-rural status. So it was a multi-stage stratified random sample. So this sample that we analyzed was not a convenient sample. A sample of schools and complex sampling weights were applied to make the sample representative of the entire population of third graders. I think it weighted up to about 340,000 third graders.
Okay, Amos, and then we'll take James.
I may have missed this in your presentation, but I think you said that the kids who lived on the border had lower incidence or prevalence of caries than those who lived off the border. Also, that those on the border were more likely to have Medicaid than those off the border. I would have thought that those with Medicaid would have less likelihood of gaining access to dental care, but would have more carriers. So what kind of coverage do the folks who live off water, are they not Medicaid and not commercially insured, and they're working poor families who have nothing? How do you explain that? I'm perplexed by the disparity, the difference between where the carriers are and where the Medicaid is.
So in terms of just reminder, just one more minute, so I'll just try to wrap this up. But in terms of overall carries experience, if the child had ever had a carry active or already filled, they were pretty similar, both border and non-border. However, if you looked at the kids with, you know, active unfilled carries in their mouths, kids in the border had a lower prevalence. The state dental director in Texas and a lot of the regional dental teams attribute this to the fact that there is higher Medicaid coverage in the border areas.
Does that mean that's one place in this country where if you are on Medicaid, you can get dental care?
It may be. It may well be. So. Yeah, no, and we need to look into that more. But the regional dentists in Texas are attribute this that the kids on Medicaid are getting better dental care, they're accessing care better.
Can we take the remainder of the questions at the end so other speakers can get their part? I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. Our next speakers, the following two presentations is a both concern same study. The titles are different than what are listed. So we have Ms. Kristen Hoft, and she will be doing Mexican American Caregivers: Conceptions of Causes of Caries. So, and she is also from the University of California, San Francisco. Okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. So, early childhood caries is severe tooth decay in children under 6 years old. It is very painful, can interfere with eating, talking, and concentration. And it can have long-term consequences, including affecting adult dentition. And this severe health problem disproportionately affects Mexican-American children, even when controlling for other factors. Early childhood caries is very complex and multifactorial. There are a lot of different factors that influence its presence. Some of the big ones mentioned by the American Dental Association are presence of bacteria and diet, particularly exposure to sweets and sweet liquids. Some mediating factors are oral hygiene, like toothbrushing and flossing, and fluoride exposure can also reduce likelihood of caries. Caregivers of young children may not be aware of all of these factors, and the caregivers' behaviors stem from their personal beliefs and knowledge around these topics. So, what do we know about layperson caregivers' beliefs about the causes of caries? There have been two main studies that look at this. One of them was conducted by Horton and Barker with rural Latino caregivers in California. And the caregivers mentioned three main biomedical reasons of the causes of caries, which were consumption of sweets or candy, bottle use, and poor oral hygiene. These caregivers also mentioned some lay reasons, particularly lack of calcium and bad genes. This study also found there was 37% of their sample had confusion about the nipple of the bottle as the cause of decay instead of the actual contents of the bottle. The other study that looked at layperson conceptions of causes of caries was conducted by Gussie and colleagues in rural Australia. It was a quantitative survey study, and it had caregivers identify the most important cause of tooth decay. 40% of these caregivers mentioned not brushing teeth daily, and 39% mentioned consumption of sweet snacks and drinks between meals, while only 10% mentioned bacteria, and only 5.5% listed nighttime bottle use.
So with this background, we came upon the study purpose to examine contextual understanding of low-income urban Mexican-American caregivers' conceptions of the causes of early childhood caries. Our participants were women of Mexican-American descent who were the primary caregiver of at least one child, age 10 or under. And they lived in a primarily Latino neighborhood in an urban center in Northern California. And we recruited participants from many different locations, including preschools, community organizations, festivals, dental clinics, and they were referred from other participants as well. Data were collected by open-ended, in-depth interviews, primarily in Spanish, and data were coded and thematically analyzed by two researchers. Just a methodological note, all reasons by mothers were counted, so when I get to presenting the results, the percentages are going to add up to over 100%. So this is some demographic information. We interviewed 48 mothers. They were around 31 years of age. They had usually two or three children in their family. They are low income with a median income of $24,000, which is around the federal poverty threshold. And they were in the U.S. for approximately 9 years and had low education with an average years of education at 8.9. So we talked to the caregivers about their children. So this is just some demographic background information on the children that were the children of the caregivers. 60% of them were under 5 years of age, and 97% of them had dental insurance. This was made possible by a supplemental program in the county that documented all children regardless, that insured all children regardless of documentation status. 55% of the children were with DentiCal, which is California's public insurance program. And 64% of the sample had parents reported the child had ever had caries experience. So what did caregivers say when asked about what causes cavities or caries in their children? It's important to note that 40% of the caregivers said they didn't know what causes caries. This was most often interspersed with a list of reasons. For example, this woman said, "They just have too much sugar. I don't know. Or maybe it's in the family. I don't know. Or too much bottle feeding at night and they left the bottle inside the mouth. Juice in the baby bottle. I think that's why. I don't know." So they have some idea of the different causes of caries, but they're lacking confidence in their knowledge. So that aside, caregivers mentioned three main causes of early childhood caries. The most frequent given reason was sugar, candy, or juice consumption. The next most frequently given reason was poor oral hygiene, and then bottle use. Seven other reasons were mentioned, but in less frequency. So the first reason given was candy or juice consumption, as illustrated by these quotes from mothers. "I think the child got cavities because of candies. She likes to eat a lot of candies. I've always tried to avoid candies, but you know that they sometimes go to parties. I think decay happened to their teeth because of the sugar in the juices they drank." The next most frequent reason was poor oral hygiene, as illustrated by these quotes from mothers. "I wasn't brushing his teeth a lot. That's why he had cavities." And, "I think her teeth are like that, decayed, because she didn't brush her teeth. I think she didn't brush her teeth." And here's a quote illustrating the use of the bottle as a reason for cavities. "I started to see that her teeth were yellow and decayed. That was because of the bottle. I didn't take her off the bottle because she would cry a lot, and I would feel bad about taking it away." These are the seven other reasons that were mentioned by caregivers. Nine caregivers mentioned lack of calcium, and eight mentioned genetics or in the family. You can see there's a variety of other reasons, such as not going to the dentist, lack of fluoride, sleeping with milk, diet, mainly the foods like vegetables and healthy things, and exposure to medicine. Most parents listed multiple reasons, with a mean number of reasons given as 2.9. And the most often given combination was all three of the main reasons that I've covered, or those three reasons plus an additional reason. And five caregivers only gave one reason, and four of those were candy, specifically just candy. This is a quote to demonstrate how multiple reasons were woven together. I think they must give them milk with Nesquik or give them a bottle a lot. I don't know. And a lot of them are just born like that, with really bad teeth. Maybe they don't brush, or maybe it's from sleeping with their juice. So we also looked deeper into why is the bottle bad for teeth. And caregivers gave a lot of different reasons as to why this might be. They weren't really sure. So they often mentioned use beyond age 1 year. So this is child still drinking the bottle at 2, 3, 4, even 5 years of age. 8 of them mentioned the sweet liquids inside, specifically juice or chocolate milk. And these are the other reasons that they gave, including sucking, sleeping with it. A lot of them talked about having the bottle at night or sleeping with it. Some of them mentioned material in the nipples, specifically rubber or plastic, having detrimental chemical components, making teeth crooked or the residue left after milk. These are some quotes that illustrate these different reasons about the bottle. I've seen 1 or 2 children with their teeth like that rotting away, who are 3 or 4 years of age, and they're still giving them the bottle. I think it might be the bottle. They shouldn't still be drinking from the bottle. Well, the bottle is very bad for them because it produces lots of cavities. Most of all, the bottle does damage for them because it's made of rubber. It's very bad for their teeth to be sucking on all that rubber. Children shouldn't fall asleep with a bottle in their mouth or anything in their mouth because their teeth will be crooked, that they aren't going to be straight, and they'll come in on top of each other or get caries. I asked 16 caregivers about their knowledge about the role of contagious bacteria in causing caries. 10 were not aware that bacteria caused caries, but 6 were, and they have recently obtained this knowledge at an educational presentation. Only 1 caregiver mentioned the role of bacteria without being prompted. So in conclusion, I'll just remind you that 40% of the mothers didn't have confidence about the causes of caries, and this most often occurred when they observed contradictions. For example, when a mother believed that consumption of soda would cause caries, and so she limited her child's intake of soda, but the child still had caries, then she would look outside to additional reasons. Mothers are largely aware of 3 main biomedical causes of caries, but they have limited knowledge on these topics. So they mentioned sugar consumption, but few mentioned timing or frequency of this consumption, which are important factors. Many mentioned oral hygiene, but they may not know the proper technique or when to start oral hygiene, such as toothbrushing. And they mentioned the bottle, but just like Horton and Barker found in their study, there's a lot of confusion about how the bottle affects cavities, and this affects subsequent behavior. For example, if they believe the rubber in the nipple is a detrimental agent, sometimes they'll change to a sippy cup, but still put them to bed with a sippy cup with juice or milk, and it has not solved the problem. Mothers are not very aware of the role of bacteria or that caries can be spread, and there's disagreement about the role of milk, with some caregivers claiming its high calcium content is protective and good for teeth, while others mentioning its sugar content, especially drinking milk at night, is a problem. And so dentists and educators need to more fully explain these causes and related preventive measures. And I just want to thank our funding and the community participants, as well as our research team and the CANDU Center. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker, getting that up.